Toyota, the number one consumer choice on the most fuel-efficient automaker, and now during Toyota's number one for a reason event, get 0.9% APR financing on a 2010 Prius.
Has ever such a fuss been made about where a World Cup, still more than a decade out, will be held? Probably not, but then the World Cup has never been scheduled for Qatar before. Only a Game's Ken Shulman was in Qatar for the most recent edition of the Asia Cup, and he provides us with a sense of what visitors on hand for the 2022 World Cup can expect.
On most days, Doha is wrapped in a cloud of desert dust, but on this January afternoon, the air is clear. From the deck of this rickety restored dhow, in the late afternoon sun, the shimmering towers of the Qatari capital look like a postmodern promised land. Along the starboard bow, a man wearing a black leather jacket over a traditional white robe pours tea from a thermos for his wife and two kids. He sees me, pours another cup, and brings it to me. I nod to thank him. He nods back. I nod to thank his wife. She looks away.
You've got to be very careful. You can't take a picture of a woman, for example, without getting her permission. Even by a mistake, taking someone's picture, you can be put in jail.
Matthew Lorimer is an independent contractor who helped Qatar stage the opening ceremonies for the 2006 Asian Games, a regional athletic competition. He says there are many things Western fans will need to know when they come to Qatar in 2022.
When we were managing the ceremonies for the Asian Games, I got a good half a dozen guys out of jail for drinking. They'd had drinks at some club and they were walking home and they were arrested. It's that simple. Before I could get there, they'd been blood tested and slapped in jail.
Qatar is a teardrop-shaped spit of desert, not quite as large as Connecticut, jutting into the Persian Gulf. The country is ruled by an emir. There's no parliament, no popular elections. Free speech is protected, so long as you don't discuss anything controversial. Blessed with enormous deposits of natural gas and oil, the Mideast monarchy went from Bedouin camps and pearl diving to skyscrapers and sovereign wealth funds in just over two decades. As the world witnessed during this January's Asia Cup soccer tournament, Qatar has the means to import materials and talent from anywhere on the globe. One glance at the skyline, a sort of murderer's row of international architecture, suggests that building nine new stadiums for 2022 will be a cakewalk. And even though temperatures can top 130 degrees here in summer, Qatar won't have to worry about the gas bill to keep them cool. The real question is, how will this still insular country deal with a month-long invasion of fans from all over the world, many of whom can't even spell Sharia? Foreigners with whom the only thing they share is a passion for soccer.
Most thing is absence, no participation in politics, no participation in public. So the soccer has become so big. And people want to be part of it.
Khalid Al-Jaber is a Qatar native completing his doctorate in the UK. He's a little miffed because officials at this first-round Asia Cup match between Japan and Syria sent him to the wrong parking lot, even though he had the right pass, then to the wrong gate, even though he had the right ticket, and then they gave away his seat. This sort of thing happens a lot here. A former journalist, Al-Jaber hopes the 2022 World Cup will push his country to bone up on customer service. Even more, he hopes it will inspire the entire region towards real political and social change.
I hope that the perspective and stereotype of Arabs changing when Qatar hold the World Cup and more Arab countries open for the world and accept the democracy and open the politics and respect the human being life and human rights. So I hope this is all changing for the 10 years from now until 2022.
I asked Al-Jaber what the 2022 World Cup might be like for Western women or for gays. In the days following Qatar's successful bid, FIFA President Sepp Blatter suggested that gays refrain from having sex when they visit Qatar in 2022. A remark he'd later recanted.
Do you go to jail here for homosexuality?
I don't think so. Maybe you get warned because it's like, it's not allowed because you have a law.
For Friday is the Muslim holy day. Locals go to pray at one of the city's many mosques. Unlike Saudi Arabia, its neighbor to the west, Qatar does tolerate other faiths. Christians in Doha worship on Friday as well, at the still unfinished multi-church complex rooted in desert sands on the western edge of the city, just past the single store where registered foreigners can buy alcohol. In the distance, on a clear day, you can see the towers that hold the capital's 48-hour water supply. This service is Orthodox, with readings in Arabic, Serbian, English, and Greek. Qatar's winning $65 billion World Cup bid includes various infrastructure items along with stadiums, a new airport, a seaport, a new city for the final, and a 25-mile bridge to Bahrain. Although given what's gone on there, they might want to rethink that one. The work will be done by men like these, some of the nearly 1 million migrant workers who live in Qatar. Albert Dantes arrived last year from the Philippines on a 2-year permit. He shares a bedroom with 7 other men, sends most of his salary home, and needs his employer's permission to change jobs or leave the country. On most Fridays, Dantes meets his friends here on the Corniche, Doha's looping seaside promenade, where they smoke, play music, and relax. It's one of the few places they're allowed to go.
You cannot go to the shopping mall in Friday because they said this is their family day. I said, every Filipino have one right, or every people in the world have rights just to buy his things. You didn't have a wife here. If police catch you, you will go to jail. This is the bad thing here in Qatar.
Lots of other places are off limits for single men here on weekends. The major squares, the family section and restaurants. But the truth is, they're off limits for single men of color. European and American men enter freely. They enjoy certain privileges that other foreigners don't.
You know what, Qatari, they are afraid from the white color skin, from the Europeans, from the Americans, you know. They were afraid. Yes, and like Filipino, they treat us Filipinos as slaves.
While migrant workers spend their free days on the Corniche or in squares on the outskirts of Doha, Qataris take to the desert. Every weekend, thousands of them flock to camps like this one, an hour or so outside of Doha. Make sure you go with the local, though. The roads and rotaries are unmarked. There are rides and games for the kids, a Bedouin tent with tea and traditional sweets, and huge sand dunes that drivers charge at with their jeeps and dune buggies. It's loud, chaotic, and dangerous. Half a dozen injured people are airlifted back to Doha every weekend. In the evenings, the main gathering place for locals is the newly rebuilt Souq Waqif, with its spice shops, restaurants, and stores selling parakeets, pigeons, and doves. At this outdoor shisha cafe, patrons draw on water pipes while the Asia Cup soccer match between India and Bahrain plays on a large wall screen with the sound turned off. The souq is usually quiet, the way the Qataris like it. But things are getting just a little wild in this fan zone outside the walls. It's a Debka party, with Syrian fans churning it up on the limestone dance floor. It doesn't matter that they lost to Japan the night before. The pulsing bass and pounding drums drive the rhythm, while the singer spins a sweet tale of love at first sight between a boy and a girl. A few Qataris join the fun, twirling and grinding beneath their headdresses. Of course, there isn't any alcohol, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, given the damage drunken soccer fans are capable of. But there also aren't any women. It's noon on Saturday. The midday prayer call wafts through Doha's landmark mall. Judging from the reaction, it seems more a call to shop or brunch, as Westerners and Qataris continue on their way to Paul's French Cafe, or Starbucks, or the Body Shop. The shopping mall has a special place in Qatari culture, an indoor paradise of plenty in a land where it's just too darn hot for most of the year. Mohamed Blouchi is an archaeologist. He knows from experience that all cultures change when they open to others. sometimes gradually, and sometimes very quickly, and that this change isn't always welcome. He also knows that a global event like the World Cup will have a huge impact on Qatar.
I think it's good. We'll give something good to my country. Many people will know my country, and the country here will be changing many things, okay? But at the same time, many people, like an old people, they are afraid what will happen, what will change, how we'll accept this change that's coming to my country, it's good or bad. Many people, they are afraid, and at the same time, many people is happy. And we don't know what will happen until 2022.
The generous salaries and benefits Qatar offers its 300,000 citizens have so far insulated the emirate from the shockwaves toppling regimes across the Middle East. Politically, Qatar is closer to the West than it is to Saudi Arabia, with whom it shares its only land border. Socially, the country stands about halfway between Riyadh and Las Vegas, with bright lights, stern laws, and a population that clamors for more fun, if not more freedoms. The World Cup may well bring some of both, for citizens, guest workers, and visitors alike. Because it's clear that when it wants to, Qatar can throw a heck of a party. For Only a Game, I'm Ken Shulman.
Ken Shulman's story about a World Cup venue like no other will be featured in this week's program. I'll also be checking in with our college basketball correspondent, Pat Forty, to see how the citizens of Kentucky are handling the upset elimination of Louisville on the first full day of the NCAA basketball tournament. We'll probably talk about some other teams, too. We'll have a story about pro basketball in Minnesota, as represented by the Timberwolves, and I'll be talking with columnist, Pulitzer Prize winner, novelist, and former spokesperson for Peel's Beer, Jimmy Breslin. His new book is a biography of Branch Rickey. So join us, and remember, you can always hear the program at onlyagame.org.